This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
What if you could take a trip of a lifetime to Antarctica without blowing through all your PTO or sacrificing work commitments? Today's guest, Jackie from Maximizing My PTO, is here to share her expert tips for making it all happen. In this episode, we're diving deep into two key strategies. One, how to maximize PTO when you have strict dates and no flexibility. And two, when can adding authorized users to your credit cards unlock serious travel benefits? Jackie's practical advice and creative approaches will revolutionize how you approach both travel planning and points earning strategies for your own journeys.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome, everybody, to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, we have a truly inspiring guest joining us. This is a traveler who's redefining what it means to maximize every opportunity, both in travel and in life. So I'm thrilled to introduce Jackie, who has the blog Maximizing My PTO, and that's also her handle on Instagram as well. Jackie is not only an expert in leveraging points and miles, but also in crafting unforgettable travel experiences while balancing a full-time job. What sets Jackie apart is her innovative approach to planning and optimizing trips, especially when you've got limited time and flexibility to take them. And I had the pleasure of meeting her just a couple months ago in person at the Travel More conference. So Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Glad we could get this scheduled. So Jackie, I always like to start with this simple question. Where are you currently? Where are you from? And how'd you get into the points and miles world?
Yeah, so I'm currently in Chicago, where I've been living for the past 5 years, but I'm originally from Austin, Texas. I heard on one of your previous podcasts, you talked about the Salt Lick and how much you love that restaurant. And it's my favorite restaurant as well. So that just made me really happy to hear as a native Texan.
Nice.
And I got into the points and miles world back 2018, I think now, where my husband and I got the Southwest credit card. And that was like back right after we'd gotten engaged, and we just put all of our spending on it. We got the companion pass, and that was great because we were young and broke, and we were able to like visit our family across the country for way cheaper. And that was really great for that phase of life. And then the pandemic hit. We continued to use that companion pass and put it to really good use, especially when the flights were like $50 from Chicago to San Diego. It was just amazing. I mean, nothing else was amazing during that time, but cheap flights were. And it was during around that same time that I started really digging into the points and miles, because I knew how to optimize Southwest, but I knew there was so much more. And as we started to come out of the pandemic, I got much more credit cards and all these sign-up bonuses. I had all these points to spend, and that really allowed us to travel internationally so much more. So that really, like, our first international trip post-COVID was to Munich in 2022. And I think we've never stopped since then, basically. We've gone out of the country. I think last year alone was like 13 countries, all across separate trips, pretty much. It doesn't slow down from here.
So Jackie, what's mind-blowing about that is you said like 13 countries last year. One would hear that and they would think, well, this has to be a full-time content creator, a full-time traveler, right? I mean, is that what you are?
So I now am a full-time content creator, but I left my job halfway, through last year. However, all of these trips that I'm talking about are also like trips that I've taken with my husband who has a full-time job. So all the principles of everything I've talked about maximizing PTO, like still very much apply to how I travel, because there's no one I like traveling with more than my husband. So I want to try to get him on every trip I can. And we work really heavily around his days off.
Awesome. Well, Jackie, what's really cool is I know you've taken some incredible trips. I mean, your blog is really super organized. I mean, you got it by country, sorry, not even country, by continent, and the countries in said continent, great destinations. There's a couple trips that I'm going to want to unpack a little bit later in the show. I want to talk about your trip to Antarctica and your trip to the Easter Island. So we're going to get to those. I know today we really wanted to focus on kind of two main areas of points and miles and do a little bit of a deeper dive in that. The first area was leveraging authorized users in points and miles, right? I know you're an expert in this space, so really wanted to start kind of from the basics, right? So for some of our listeners that are more new to this world, can you talk a little bit to what is the player one, player two game, and how does authorized users come into this space?
Yeah, so when people generally refer to the player one, player two in the points and miles world, it really refers to usually couples, though not exclusively. Sometimes it's parents and their children, things like that. And it's one person is kind of usually the primary person. Usually this person's the one most into the points and miles world. They sign up for a credit card. They then refer their spouse or child or whoever to that same credit card. So then they're getting a referral bonus. The other person is getting a welcome bonus. And then you can kind of ping pong back and forth as you continue to sign up for different credit cards. If somebody closes one, then they can get referred for it again and all that kind of stuff. As that relates to authorized users, a lot of people in this space actually just put a blanket statement and are like, don't bother with authorized users. There's, you know, they talk about the downsides and I can talk about those for sure, but there is a real way to finesse it in so many circumstances. It's not for everybody's situation, but there are a lot of benefits to authorized users. I'll kind of start with like the one that I always think of why I'm still an authorized user on one of my dad's credit cards. It is not because I put any spend on it. I am a full-fledged adult who pays my own way in the world, but I am an authorized user on his American Airlines card. One, for Admirals Club access, because he has the card with Admirals Club access, and two, for credit history. So my credit history says that I have 38 years of credit history. I am 27 years old. So my credit is over a decade older than I am, which gave me a leg up when I just started out with credit, you know, fresh out of college and all of that. So that's a really great way, whether it's a parent to a child. I also know people who have put, say, their spouse on as an authorized user if their spouse isn't from the U.S. so that they could build American credit that way. So it's really great to help the person who is the authorized user build credit. So that's like a really great way to go about it. All of that to say, you have to like trust the person. And so, you know, make sure, you know, that's like so much of points and miles. Like you have to be fiscally responsible. And then so do any people you wrangle into this crazy world.
So I really love that you mentioned that, Jackie. And this actually allows me opportunity, which I always love when I can, to throw on my financial planning hat for those who are new to the show. A financial advisor, own a financial planning firm. So love points and miles for a lot of different reasons. But one of the interesting things that I've talked to clients about is adding their child as an authorized user. Then this could be like their newborn child as an authorized user on their credit cards to the same point that you said. Now, they probably don't need their 6-month-old or 1-year-old is not really looking for the Admirals Club access, and they can typically bring them in regardless of having them as an authorized user. But what, to your point, what it allows them to do is start having a strong credit history, assuming the parents themselves have good use of credit and do all the principles that we talk about in this show, right? Paying off your cards routinely, not paying interest, all those different things. And that can allow, by the time your child does go to get to college, their credit history is already strong when they go to apply for student loans, when they go to get a car, all those different things. So I love that you mentioned that you have a credit history that's older than you are, because that's an opportunity for parents to take advantage of something that's not really tied to points and miles, but this is why we wanted to focus in on the authorized user space. So were you about to go into more about the Admirals Club itself? I think that would be a really cool kind of side tangent to get into.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to go into the authorized users regarding that card specifically in the Admirals Club, because I know for that card, it's the same price to add one person or three people as an authorized user. Fees go up if it's four or more authorized users, but for one to three, it's the same $175 a year, which is great for my family because my dad has added my mom, my sister, and I each as authorized users. So we all are getting Admiral's Cup access anytime we're flying American, which is great because we all live all over the country. We're constantly flying to see each other, to go on our own trips. It doesn't matter if we're traveling together. You don't have to be with the person who's the primary cardholder. I think that's a really important point. Unfortunately, right now, you do have to be flying American. So that's a downside. Used to be a little different. But one thing to note is that the downside of him putting me on that card is that that is not a free or no annual fee card. That is a very expensive credit card with the annual fee. I would typically recommend parents put their kid on a no annual fee card so that you know you're never going to close it, because obviously closing that credit line would then shake up the credit. So I just told my dad he can never close that for that reason. But yeah, I would generally recommend going with a no annual fee card. Leave it in a drawer if you don't want to spend on it. Like, just don't close the card.
Super smart thing to interject on there, because that is important, right? Closing the card can mess up the average credit age history. So question for you, Jackie, what are some of the key things that someone wants to should be thinking about when it comes to, do I add this person as an authorized user or not? I think it was a great example you mentioned your father with kind of you guys when you travel on your own now. But what about when your player two is in the house with you and you guys are probably traveling a lot together already?
Yeah, so this is how my authorized user strategy actually works the majority of the time, is all of the cards I hold and in the relation to all of the ones I hold or my husband holds. So we each have our own set of cards and then we are each authorized users on certain cards. So for example, when we got our first non-co-branded card was the Chase Sapphire Reserve. That was the first one we delved into flexible points, the transferable points, all of that. So I added my husband as an authorized user, partly because then we each have a card that we can go out into the real world and spend on. So if he, you know, we're trying to hit a minimum spend, it's a lot easier if somebody else has the card with them wherever they are. Obviously, a lot of shopping nowadays is done online, but there are tons of purchases that are still taking place in person. And so if they are able to maximize that card properly, it goes really well. I've actually labeled every single card in my husband's wallet with a little sticker telling him where to use each one. You know, this one's for airlines, this one's for groceries and restaurants and all down the line. So if player two needs a little help, that could go far. But the way we've structured all of our cards, and it was, you know, in hindsight, I would have done it a little bit the opposite, but all of our transferable points can be funneled into all of my husband's airline and hotel accounts. Now, it would have been great if they were all funneled into mine, just a little bit easier, but I have all the logins, so it's not that big a deal. But it's great that they can, whether it's Amex or Chase or Capital One, they can all funnel, like say into, for example, because all those banks transfer to Aeroplan, every single point we have can go to his Aeroplan account, which is great. When you're not stuck with like, oh, I have 30,000 points here and you have 50,000 points there, but there's no way to combine them and get that 80,000 point ticket. It's really hard if you're having points stranded across various accounts. So being strategic about like how you funnel things through. Now, I know Chase, for example, you can pool with a spouse. It's just a little harder than because you have to call to do it. It's not instantaneous. You have to wait for a phone rep and all that jazz. So the benefit to the authorized user there is convenience. So you're able to just immediately send it through. We know how quickly award space can be taken. Every, you know, minute, hour matters sometimes. So it's really great to be able to make quick decisions and act on them appropriately by having a strategy that works that way.
So Jackie, are you able to, you mentioned that you can transfer all of your points and corral all of your points in his account. Are you able to corral all of his points into your account? And if not, why is that?
So no, because he's an authorized, for example, he's an authorized user on my Amex Platinum card. I only hold the Amex Platinum with Amex. He owns his own Amex Platinum and the Amex Gold. So with all of his Amex points are stuck with him. But because he's an authorized user on mine with a free authorized user, I know Amex Platinum has a paid and a free. We didn't pay for it, but that means all of my points can funnel to him as well. It just kind of ended up being the way we worked it out. I wasn't thought through all the way in the beginning, but it's worked out well since then. Like I said, if we had done it the other way and funneled them all to me, it might have made a little more sense since I kind of am in control of all the points. But like I said, I can log into all the accounts. I can transfer them whenever I need. So it doesn't make that big of a difference, especially because you can book a flight for anybody through your account. It doesn't matter if they're related to you. It doesn't matter if they are on an authorized user. Like if you go into your American Airlines account, you can book a flight for anyone on earth. So it's not that big of a deal when it comes to actually booking and redeeming.
Awesome. So that sounds like a lot of the benefits. What are the risks, right? What are the risks to having an authorized user on your card? That, and it's probably less likely when it's someone in your household having as high risk, but what are those risks?
Yeah, so I would say the number one is, depending on the card, there's a cost. As we talked about, like the Chase Sapphire Reserve has a cost for authorized users. The American Airlines card has a cost. So sometimes it's just you're having to make that financial decision to see if kind of weighing pros and cons and if it's worth the benefits that that card provides. On top of that, it does take like a 524 slot for the authorized user. So if they're looking at getting any Chase cards in the near future, depending on what else they've recently opened, it could be a problem. So just keeping that in mind when being, you know, mindful. And then the biggest thing is that you're tying your credit to their credit. So if they're spending on the card, you're responsible for paying it off. I would say, like, if you're, for example, a parent wanting to help your child build credit, but you maybe don't trust that they're not going to go buy a bunch of video games at the store or something, you can put the credit card in a drawer and not give them the number. Like, you don't have to give them actual access to spending the money. But that's why I would really only do it with, you know, a parent-child relationship or a spouse relationship. Somebody you know is going to be financially responsible. Obviously, in the case of my husband and I, all of our finances are combined anyway, so it doesn't make a difference whether he's an authorized user or not in terms of financial responsibility. But yeah, so there's just some things you need to think about. I would never do it with a friend, no matter how much I trusted that friend. I just think it's not worth any of it. It's not worth the financial risk. It's not worth your friendship. It's not worth any of it.
Now that makes perfect sense. So going back to the 524 rule with Chase, I'm curious. Let's just say you have a couple, right? This couple, I'm going to throw a hypothetical scenario at you that we did not pre-plan, because I'm really curious what you're going to say here. So you have a couple, both couples only have one slot taken in their 524, and this couple is now thinking about getting into points and miles, and they want to get, let's just make it easy and say they want to get the Chase Sapphire Preferred. Would you recommend that whoever gets it first, husband or wife, that they go ahead and put their other spouse as an authorized user from the get-go? Or would you say not?
I think if they're at one card in their five slots, I wouldn't be concerned about it from that perspective, because it doesn't seem like they're probably going to start rapidly ramping up the number of cards that quickly. However, you can also, if you do decide to add somebody, you can have it taken off and then you can call the credit companies to have the line removed. So there's ways to get around 524 if you end up coming close to it. So I wouldn't say that's like the biggest deciding factor. I think things like, do you need help hitting the minimum spend is a really big one. And then there's a really big misconception about authorized users that if you add your spouse as an authorized user, they can't get that card themselves, which is totally false. If I add my husband as an authorized user on the Chase Sapphire Preferred card, I can still refer him to his own. That's kind of what I was talking about with the Amex Platinums. He's an authorized user on my Amex Platinum and holds his own Amex Platinum. So it's not mutually exclusive. I see that question pop up all the time. So I just really wanted to do away with that myth. You can be an authorized user on the same card that you also are a primary user on.
Going to the Amex Platinum now, that has one of the highest fees out there, especially in the personal space. Let's say someone's a little bit weary of the fee. Now, of course, with the fee comes a very nice sign-up bonus oftentimes. Would the Amex Platinum, which their authorized user card that offers benefits has a fee with it as well, would you recommend someone add their spouse as an authorized user on the Amex Platinum, or just bite the bullet and get another Amex Platinum themselves, the full one themselves, to get the sign-up bonus?
So that one's going to come down to how well are you optimizing all of those credits that Amex gives you? Because for me, it's a $700 card, but I get over $1,000 in value out of it. And I ran all the numbers and I could get more than $700 in value out of a second Amex Platinum as well. Now, it really depends. Like, are you going to use the Equinox credit or not? Not everyone is, but Clear credit, all these things. If the credits are useless to you, then you need to do the math and subtract out what is helpful and what's not, because the math might make sense where it makes sense to just pay for the paid version of the authorized user card. That was when Amex made the change to the Centurion lounges where they no longer were allowing guests for free. That was when I went in and did the math and decided that it makes more sense for my husband to get his own than for me to move him from the free authorized user to the paid one.
Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. DeAndre here, and I just wanted to interrupt briefly to remind you of two things. First, be sure to sign up for our newsletter where we give you direct access to travel updates, news you'll want to jump on in the Points and Miles world, and our continuously updated card offers to maximize your travel rewards, often before they're ever mentioned in the show. Also, if you didn't already know, we have a private Facebook group where we share news as it breaks, ideas, and other things that don't make it into the newsletter or show many times, and that's the best place to get your points and miles question answered directly by me and other travel enthusiasts. Both of these links will be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Jackie, phenomenal breakdown on the player one, player two strategy and use of authorized users in cards. I wanted to move on and talk about something that I know you had a lot of experience with yourself personally before you went into full-time travel and content creation, and that you still experience and work with now with your husband's schedule, which is traveling with fixed dates and fixed destinations. And this is really unique in the points and miles space because one of the things I talk about all the time on the show is flexibility. And when you have flexible schedules, flexible dates, that makes points and miles so much easier because if you want to go to wherever, let's just say Europe, and you know that you want to go, even if you want to hone into Barcelona as an example, this day it could be 80,000 points one way in business class, but the very next day it could be 250,000 points in business class. Right. And so it's really difficult when you have fixed dates. So my question is, how do you do it? Right. Because flexibility is typically pretty key, but you seem to have kind of cracked the code on how to get around that. And so I'd love for you to share what's been your secret.
Yeah. So I think to give some background, I think people come across like firm dates and destinations a lot more than you kind of realize. If you want to go see a concert that's in a certain place, if there's a sporting event, if there's a wedding you're invited to, you're not picking the dates and destinations of those kinds of things. St. Patrick's Day in Ireland is always in the same place at the same time every single year. So things like that, like there's a lot of examples of like where you just don't get to be in the driver's seat and don't get to follow the deal every time. And then in terms of maximizing PTO, for me, like I couldn't imagine flying out on a Friday at 1 p.m. flight and having to take all of Friday off when I could take a Friday night red eye and get to Europe the next morning and I've wasted no time. So every little detail regarding all the time saved to not lose any days of work and not waste any PTO days as a travel day, as little as possible. Those are kind of the driving forces behind so much of my strategy. Now, the number one thing is the booking in advance as much as physically possible. That's going to help make things as easy as it possibly can be. That doesn't mean it's easy. It just means it's easier. So that means knowing, for example, how far in advance does an airline open their calendar? Every airline opens their calendars a little bit differently. U.S. airlines open it later than international airlines. And that goes for partner availability too. For example, I just booked a flight to Bangkok for next year on Q Suites, and it's for just about a year from now. And it was open on Qatar's website and had availability, but British Airways was not yet showing availability because they hadn't opened that partner space to British. So I had to transfer the Avios from British to Qatar. It was easy, but just knowing that you have to go look over in a different website, those are the kinds of things that make it not obvious. But once you know them, you can kind of optimize from there. So knowing like, okay, these are when the seats are open. I'm going to an international wedding in 2026. I already know the date. And all I have to do is I set a calendar reminder for the day that flights open. There's a direct flight. And I'm like, great. All I got to do is book it the day that award availability opens, because that's your best chance at finding it, especially if you're traveling, you know, with somebody else and you can need multiple seats and things like that. Family travel is even harder. You know, the more seats you need, the harder it is, the earlier you need to be looking, including like the day the seats open up. And that means you can also book your outbound and then wait for the return flight to open, say a week later when you're coming back. kind of not planning the whole trip at once in terms of booking flights. So booking as far in advance is really huge. Now, of course, that's not always possible. Say you were invited to a wedding and it's 4 months from now, you know, you don't have as much flexibility. That doesn't mean you can't find anything. And I think people get really discouraged when they're like, oh, we're already like 3 months out. Like that does, like, don't give up before you've started searching. Like that's really key. You gotta like know what's out there, because you'd be surprised sometimes like what's still available. Maybe it's in a different class of service than you would prefer. Maybe you're flying premium economy instead of business. At least you're getting there. That's the number one thing. Like you're getting there. You're optimizing your time when there. I love business class as much as the next person. I seek it out as much as physically possible, but I'd much rather fly economy and get there and maximize my time in that place than take like 42 hours of flying business and then maybe eventually end up at my destination. So I think you can also set alerts. If you're not finding anything, say it is out, you can set alerts on various types of websites to alert you to award availability. That's just like the very first step, really, when it comes to it. But I'm really picky about dates and destinations. As far as like personal travel that's not tied to an event or anything like that, like I really try to travel as many days as physically possible while still factoring in like my husband only has so much time off. He can only work remotely so much. My husband does work in an office 5 days a week, though they do allow for some remote work. So there's a little bit of flexibility, but not as much as if he was just fully remote. So we pick destinations first. We have a long bucket list, pretty much an endless bucket list at this point. And we kind of prioritize like, okay, well, you know, here of the all the places on the list, you know, we have a slot open for a week in April. Where's the best place to go in April and in relation to all the other trips? We just did a hiking trip. Maybe we do a city trip and just kind of like balance our trips throughout the year to really maximize our enjoyment. We try to do a little bit of everything. We love adventure travel. We love city travel. We love all of it, like historical landscapes, anything. So, but we just try to make sure that we're balancing everything appropriately. But we pick the destination first. So for, you know, this trip next year, we knew we wanted to go to Bhutan. And to get there, we had to go through Bangkok. And then we worked backwards and we're like, okay, that means we can fly Q Suites. And then, you know, worked our way through there. But Bhutan was the destination. Q Suites was the deal along the way. And we were able to make the flights work where we, you know, once again, flying out Friday evening so that we're maximizing time in the office, still getting as much time on the road as possible.
So what about peak travel times? Because obviously, a lot of people that have PTO, the majority of people, if I had to guess, would be using it around the holidays, maybe Christmas, New Year's as an example, Thanksgiving. But that's also the time that most travel is the most expensive. And if not booked far in advance, award travel can be pretty dried up unless you're willing to roll the dice and go pretty close in like a week or two out from those dates. So what would be your advice to those individuals that maybe they're not taking a lot of other PTO-based trips throughout the year, but they do want to utilize these longer times off that they have around Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, et cetera?
Like that's how most of our travel is built around holidays. So we build in holidays to reduce the number of vacation days for sure. So I'm constantly traveling in peak season. And definitely, you know, facing sometimes higher crowds, but not always. It's not always as crowded as you think it's going to be somewhere, for example. As far as award availability, one strategy is to book a backup flight. Say you want to, you know, fly from Chicago and you want to go visit family in California and you can't find anything award availability, but you can book a flight on Southwest, you know, a refundable ticket, or one that at least will get you airline credit back that can be used later. You can always book a backup flight and keep hoping for one that will open with award space. So you can, and then, you know, set those alerts and things like that. Constantly check. I found that sometimes the alerts aren't as quick as you would hope. So constantly be checking. People cancel trips all the time for all sorts of reasons. All it takes is somebody's dog getting sick and now there's a seat available on that plane that you can book with points. So it really takes a little bit more finessing. I would say booking early is definitely still my number one recommendation for the holiday season, especially. But earlier this year, like I went to Easter Island for Labor Day, and that was obviously holiday weekend in the U.S. We still found flights out of the U.S. on points. So it's definitely doable. I've done holiday travel on points many, many, many times. It can be done. And we booked that flight to Easter Island only 3 months out, I should.
Perfect. So Jackie, any other last tips in the space of maximizing your PTO, which I know was really your brand that you cared for the listeners to know. Anything else? You know, you just mentioned it's important to straddle the holidays, have a backup plan in place. A lot of good tips. Anything else you'd like to mention before we move on to a couple of your travel stories?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is be open to positioning flights. Even though I live in Chicago, it's a major hub. We still end up taking positioning flights a lot. We fly over to JFK, we fly over to SFO, wherever. Sometimes the deal isn't out of your home airport, and that's okay. Often what that looks like for us in terms of work is we'll take a Thursday night flight to, say, JFK, spend a night at like an airport hotel, work remotely from said airport hotel all day Friday, and take a Friday night flight out to wherever our actual destination is. So kind of if you're open to a little bit of flexibility and have, you know, are able to build in work remote days here and there, it really allows you a lot of options as far as connecting around the world, not just direct flights.
Love that. That strategy actually is really, really cool. So red eye out on a Thursday, work from the hotel on Friday, and then you're off to some international destination Friday evening. Kind of mind blown here, actually. I don't know why I never thought about that. Granted, I don't have PTO myself, be running the practice, but still, I just think that's a genius way to leverage your time and efficiency when it comes to travel. So, Jackie, appreciate you sharing those things. I want to transition and talk about some amazing travel stories. I'm curious, points and miles used in some of these, or were these cash trips, or are they part of a larger trip? And the first one I want to mention, because you're one of the few people that I've met that have been to Antarctica, and I know you actually got to, I believe, camp at least one night in Antarctica, which sounds absolutely insane to me. So just love for you to share about the Antarctic experience.
Yeah, Antarctica, it was the best trip I've ever taken, first of all. But camping, kayaking, doing the polar plunge, seeing penguins, seeing seals and whales, I mean, it was just truly unbelievable. It feels like you're on another planet. You're as far from civilization as you pretty much can be. And it just allows you to explore and really feel kind of connected to the explorers who came before. Even though you're on like a nice cruise ship, you have, you know, food being cooked for you. There might be a spa on board or a sauna. But when you're on land, when you're on these Zodiacs, because there's nothing else around, there's no hotels or resorts, it feels very much like you're stepping back in time in that way. And it's really, really an awesome experience. Camping specifically was amazing. It was my husband's first time ever camping. So that was a very unique experience. We didn't have tents. We were in bivy bags, which are basically look like body bags that you kind of put a sleeping bag inside. Surprisingly warm. You build a little trench so that the wind flows over you instead of hitting you. I slept so well. It was great. I think I had the most fun of everybody there. I really had a great time camping. I would do it again. It was just such a unique experience. I woke up at like 3 a.m. just for a second, and I opened my eyes and I could see out onto the water. The sun never really fully sets. It never gets dark. The sun sets, but it never gets like dark. So you were able to still see everything. It was calm. The ship actually leaves you, so you can't even see the ship. So you really feel like you are remote camping, and it was a really epic experience. Regarding the points and miles aspect, unfortunately, the cruise itself was not booked with points and miles. That would have been amazing and saved us so much money. However, our flights were booked with points and miles down to Buenos Aires. And when I was looking, because obviously in this case, our dates were very firm. They were set by the cruise line. We did pick a cruise ship that sailed over a holiday just to save one day of PTO, but we still obviously had to be there by a certain day and come back at a certain time. So when I was looking at flights, there were no good options, I should say, to fly business class, because it's a really long way down to Buenos Aires and Argentina. So we were really hoping to fly business class. There were no good options that were less than like 300,000 points a person, like one way. So we're like, well, we're not spending millions of points on this. Like, that's not worth it. However, I got a little creative. I went to flightsconnections.com. I said, like, show me every way you could possibly go from Chicago to Buenos Aires on one ticket. And that actually meant going Chicago, Madrid, Madrid, Buenos Aires on Iberia. And that was a great use of points. Flying business, it's not the most luxurious business class, but it's a lie flat seat. So it was fantastic. And then we did the same thing reversing back. And so on the way back, we actually spent a week in Andorra working remote and exploring that tiny country. So kind of use it as like a built-in stopover almost in a way, since you have to book each segment kind of by themselves.
Super cool. Do you remember how long was the cruise?
The cruise itself was 10 nights. And then I think our cruise included 2 nights in Ushuaia at a hotel before the cruise. So I guess the whole experience was 12 nights.
Wow. Okay, perfect. That's something that's on the bucket list that I would love to do and experience. I know there's a few of them that do that. So that's really interesting, though, that you flew from Chicago over to Madrid before going all the way down to Buenos Aires. That sounds wild, but like you said, great use of points.
We got a lot of weird looks. When we were explaining it to all of our friends, they were like, "What you're doing? What? Why would you possibly go all the way over?" And it just made sense. And it didn't add that much flight time when you actually, because we had to connect. There was no direct flight from Chicago to Buenos Aires. We had to make a connection somewhere. May as well lay in business class and enjoy some food and entertainment while you're on your way there.
I sound off on that 100%. We've done similar crazy-ish things on our long-haul flights going to Bali and the Maldives and all the different things on the other side of the world. So from a person that gets it, I got to say, I get it and I can appreciate that. So Antarctica was a highlight, one of your favorite trips ever. I know you had a really cool experience in the Easter Island, and I haven't heard many people talk about really the Easter Island at all. Very curious, was this a bucket list destination? Did it just kind of line up that, you know, the location fit your time frame? How did that come about, and what was that trip? What was that experience like as well?
Yeah, so in about early May, I just kind of looked at our calendar and was like, crap, we don't have a trip booked for Labor Day. And I don't like that. I don't like it wasting a holiday. I don't like not traveling during a holiday, even if it's just a weekend trip somewhere domestically. I was like, we got to find somewhere to go. And we had looked at some like national parks. They were already booked up because we were looking 3 months out. And so then I just went to Google Flights Explore, and I just kind of started, you know, moving the map around, trying to get some ideas. I saw Easter Island. It was a place that's always kind of been on my bucket list in the back of my mind, not one that I ever really had a plan for when or how we were going to do it. And then it just was like, okay, like, what would that even look like? I went to flightconnections.com. Okay, there's one flight a day and it's out of Santiago. Okay, like, how would we get to Santiago? And I'm looking and I'm just going to Google Flights and I'm like, oh, look, there's a flight out of JFK that's a red eye. That means I don't have to waste any PTO. And so I just kind of started working backwards. I looked on the way back, there's a red eye up to Miami. And so it kind of just fell together in such a way. And it wasn't even intentional, but once I laid out all the pieces and I was like, we can do this. And then I found a word available. I found we could do it in cash. And I was like, well, that's cool. Then I was like, can I do it on points? And then I looked for award availability. I found LATAM award availability through British Airways. And I was like, oh, we're doing this. We stayed at a Hyatt down in Santiago. It all fell together. So the way the trip like looked from start to finish was we went Chicago to New York on like a Wednesday evening. Thursday, my husband worked from the New York office of his company. I took the day to go to the U.S. Open because it happened to be that weekend. So that was really cool. And then we took a Blade helicopter to JFK. So that was like a fun bonus to the trip.
Well, those are cool.
Yeah. And so then we went to JFK, took a red eye down to Santiago. We land at like 7 a.m. The time zones match up. So it's like basically the same working hours or we go to the hotel. I had paid for early check-in, like an extra like $80 or something so that we could check in at like 9 instead of 3. And that meant my husband could get into the room, work remotely the whole day on Friday. And then Friday evening, we took the opportunity to go to one of the top 50 restaurants in the world that's in Santiago. It was amazing. Kind of the whole trip became a vacation at this point by working backwards. Saturday, we flew, I should mention, from JFK down to Santiago was premium economy booked on British Airways, but it was operated by LATAM. And then on Saturday, we flew Santiago to Easter Island. And that round trip ticket from Santiago to Easter Island was booked by itself, business class, for almost the same price as economy. Because I booked it through the Chilean version of the website. So LATAM has like an American version of the website. It's in English. You can see things in US dollars. They also have a Chilean version that is exclusively in Spanish and it shows you things in Chilean pesos. That's where Google Translate and currency converters come in. I don't speak Spanish. I have no understanding of the exchange rate, but I was able to go through the entire research and checkout process and it ended up costing or almost as much as economy if you booked it through the US. So it was a really great deal, especially because it's a lot further of a flight than you think. It's about 5 hours each way from Santiago to Easter Island. So it was like 10 hours in business class round trip, which was great. And then we spent 2 nights. So we landed Saturday at noon in Easter Island. And then we spent 2 nights in Easter Island. It's a very small island. It doesn't take a lot of time to cover a lot of ground. We hired a private driver to and guide to just show us as much as possible. And then Monday, with Labor Day, at about noon, we flew out back to Santiago, had a very quick layover, and then took a red eye up to Miami, worked remotely from WeWork Tuesday morning all day, and then Tuesday night took a flight back up to Chicago. So that definitely, it was a whirlwind trip. Every single piece had to go correctly. We did not have a lot of options. If anything, you know, got canceled or got super delayed, everything worked out perfectly. It really couldn't have gone better. And we totally lucked out that every piece fell in, because there was a bunch of different plane tickets booked separately, hotels booked all over the place separately. Just keeping track of it logistically was a pretty impressive, I think, just because there were so many moving parts in such a short trip. But it's very doable. We did Switzerland for Memorial Day last year in 3 days. So we were gone, you know, no PTO. I think people don't think you can go internationally in 3 days. You absolutely can, even like as close as like the Caribbean or Mexico or Canada. Like, those are great options if you're trying to, you know, get away and don't have a lot of time.
Jack, I think that was an incredible explanation of not just your process, your thought process of how you built the trip out, and using the Flight Connections website, which I highly recommend. I personally use it. I think I paid the $150 it is to have access for life. So you can see the route to of any airport and all the ways to get to said airport. I use that to study how I got to Bali and back and the Maldives and back multiple times. But the utilization you had on your dates of travel and the timing for not having to take additional PTO, which, I mean, you actually, you live and breathe what you said. You maximize the time off that you had. And now, yes, you do have a unique scenario. I think it goes without pointing out that some people don't have, or many people don't have, which is not everyone has the ability to work remote in different opportunities, right? Some people have to be in the office 9 to 5 every single day. Some people have the opportunity to be remote sometimes. Some people have a remote opportunity to be remote all the time. So you are working with what you have, but you're doing it very effectively. I think that's the key. At the end of the day, no matter who you are, how much PTO you do get, how your ability to leave the office works, it comes down to, can you figure out ways to strategically maximize your time away so that you can maximize your opportunity to still travel, even if you had limited PTO or don't have the opportunity to work remotely. So I love how you broke that down. I'm curious, as we start to wrap up here, any future travel plans lined up here that you're really excited to share about?
Yeah, so I'm about to leave to go snorkel with orcas in Norway here about in a week from now. So I'm super excited. I'm just hoping I don't get like eaten. That would suck. But coming up, we've got a lot on the books already. 2025 is already looking very full. I'm already mapping out 2026 at this point. So, you know, 2025, I'm like going to Bhutan and the Dolomites, Upland, South Africa. We just got a lot going on. And 2026 is already starting to form and take shape, which is crazy to be looking that far out.
Wow, that's absolutely wild. Well, where can the listeners follow you to not only learn more about how you do maximize your PTO, but also follow the journeys as well?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at maximizingmyPTO. My website is maximizingmyPTO.com. And if you go to either of those places, you can sign up for my free 6-day email course where I talk all about points and miles and maximizing your PTO. So that's a really great resource. It gets sent to your inbox over the course of 6 days. So it's really easy.
Perfect. Jackie, it's been great having you on the show. Two last things I always want to wrap up with. The first is, who should we have next on the show?
I think that you need to have Janelle on a jet on the show. She is a Delta expert, first of all. So for any people listening who want to know more about Delta, she's the queen of that. She's the Delta queen. She's also really great when it comes to getting compensation when things go wrong. I've learned a lot from her in that regard as well. She's also just a really fun personality and just a really nice person.
Awesome. Well, I know she was at Travel More. I did not get a chance to meet her in person while we were there, even though we crossed paths a couple of times. So I am excited for the opportunity to have her on the show and maybe even do a deep dive on Delta. I think that would be great for the listeners to hear as well. Jackie, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I just want everyone to, first of all, think really creatively. Like, don't get stuck in the, you know, I only have X amount of days. That means I can only go XYZ places. Like, you probably can go more places than you think. Google Flights and Google Explorer has like given me a lot of ideas over the years that I would have never expected. You just never know when a flight time works for your schedule and suddenly you're in a country you never expected to be in or never thought you'd have the opportunity to get to. And then on the same note, once you're in a new place, like really, really make the most of your time there. Whether that's, you know, trying as much of the good food as possible, whether that's, you know, getting out of your comfort zone and trying an activity you never thought you'd be able to do, experiencing local culture, whatever it is to you that means like maximizing your time and enjoying it to the fullest so that you, you know, walk away with as many amazing memories as you can. I really encourage people to do that because that's how I live my life. And it's been a really amazing way to travel.
Jackie, that's super cool. I'm going to add a little tidbit for the listeners. If you're going to use Google Flights the way Jackie does, which is how she's able to figure out these incredible trips and the locations and the destinations, if you recall a few episodes back, we had Julian, the founder of PointsPath, on there, which is a Google Flights plugin that, as you search for flights, automatically shows you the points and miles required for said flights. Now, mostly for domestic travel, but there's more airlines to come. I think it's really cool, Jackie. You're doing a lot of great things. Jackie, you're absolutely living up to your brand, which is maximizing my PTO. And at the same time, you're living up to the name of this podcast, which is Revolutionizing Your Journey, because what you've been able to do is revolutionize the way people look at their PTO and are able to still maximize it for travel. So I really want to thank you for being on the show today. This was awesome. The deep dive on the authorized user and player one, player two strategy and how to utilize points and miles, as well as just PTO in general for incredible travel, has been phenomenal. I'm so thankful to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. And for the listeners out there, be sure to follow Jackie on all the social media channels and her blog as well. It's really insightful, really cool photos. You can see photos of her trip from Antarctica and so many other destinations as well. As always, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Check out our website to join our newsletter also, and give us a rating, a review, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.